We interrupt this program to bring you an important Wayfair message. Wayfair's got style tips for every home. This is Nicole Byer, helping you make those rooms flyer. Today's style tip, when it comes to making a statement, treat bold patterns like neutrals. Go wild! Like an untamed animal print area rug under a rustic farmhouse table from Wayfair.com. Ooh, fierce! This has been your Wayfair style tip to keep those interiors superior.
Wayfair, every style, every home.
Everything from clothing to household items are getting more expensive each day. The world of fast fashion has complicated clothing production by shipping cheap parts around the world to whoever can sew them the cheapest. And now you, the consumer, are paying the price with rising costs. American Giant is about keeping things simple and close to home. They aren't affected by tariffs because their products never leave the U.S. Skip the tariff and snag yourself American-made clothing with American Giant. Get 20% off your first order when you use promo code STAPLE20 at American-Giant.com. That's 20% off when you use code STAPLE20 at American-Giant.com.
Here in America, work is in trouble. We've offshored our manufacturing, sent away good jobs, and lost so much ability to make things. American Giant is a company that's pushing back against this tide. They make high-quality clothing, sweatshirts, jeans, dresses, jackets, and so much more right here in the USA. Visit American-Giant.com and get 20% off your first order when you use code STAPLE20 at checkout. That's 20% off your first order at American-Giant.com. Promo code STAPLE20.
This is Hidden Killers Week in Review.
A look back at the most prolific stories of the week.
This is Hidden Killers with Tony Bruschi. Here now, Tony Bruschi.
Here's something that I, because I listened to, I was driving back from Kansas yesterday. I even texted you over the weekend because I drove by, because I know you're from that area originally too. And I took my daughter by where the BTK house was, because that's a great father-daughter experience. Anyway, I was driving back. Exactly. Park City. It hasn't changed. Drove on the way back listening to 4 hours of the testimony from Friday, the 28th or 27th or whatever it was, Friday the 30th. And the whole time, I mean, it was basically a good 4 hours straight of going back and forth with Welcher about the data that he analyzed that was based on based on Welcher's testimony with who is the expert that they brought in on the prosecution on Friday. His name escapes me at this second, but
Welcher was the prosecution's expert witness, and then he also talked about the other expert that actually broke down the digital, some of the digital timing.
Sure. I'm talking about the defense's witness that came up there.
The defense witness. The defense witness, you're right. His name escapes me too. It was DiGiorno or DiGiorno.
DiGiorno. It's not delivery. It's DiGiorno. You're right. It was something of that nature. It just completely escapes me while we're on here live. But there was just going back and forth for 4 hours about basically a 30-second time window. And at the end of the day in all of this, a 30-second time window is a pretty small space in time. So to me, I mean, the fact that we have the technology to basically figure this down now almost to the exact second, the fact that it's still a 30-ish second time window doesn't really change anything for me. If I were to go see, okay, well, the vehicle does this maneuver and then his phone stops working, basically anywhere within that window to me is telling me, okay, it looks like there's a dead man here and there's taillight embedded in him and the car shows this and the phone shows that. There's nobody else here where this could have happened. Nothing else could have happened here other than that. Just by deduction, it seems that she hit him. I don't know. 30 seconds isn't a big, huge deal to me. Should it be? Because the defense sure seems to want to make it to be.
Well, two things on that.
Yeah.
First of all, the defense witness did no examination of anything himself. The only thing he examined was a report. This is the number one mistake that you cannot do as a defense or as any sort of expert testimony. You make your own conclusions based on your own experiments, mm-hmm. based on your own reading of the data and information, your own calculations. So he, to me, just did a death drop trying to say he's basing everything on another expert's conclusion. Mm-hmm. By doing that, he's saying, I adopt mm-hmm. the expert's conclusions.
Yeah.
And I'm sort of working off that to try to make my own. No, you have to have the original data to make your own. And so he not only took a shortcut, he cheated the path. He never walked the path. He just got to the end and made guesswork of how he got there. Mm-hmm. And you cannot do that as an expert. So that was the first thing that stuck out to me. I was shocked. I've never seen that. Now, this isn't to say lawyers try to get you to do that.
Mm-hmm.
They say, hey, listen, we have the expert report. Can you look this over and poke holes in it? And the answer is always this: no. I can conduct my own investigation and give you my own conclusions, and that may or may not line up with his or her conclusions, but I have to do this all on my own. I will never take another expert report. And literally, that's expert 101.
Mm-hmm.
I'm sure they just didn't have the money or they didn't have the time
to
have him do that.
It's not delivery. It's DeSorga, by the way. Matthew DeSorga.
DeSorga.
Yeah, DeSorga. It was close. Yes.
You're going to have to clip out the other.
Yeah, we'll leave it. It is what it is. But it's, so we had all of that coming in on Friday. And I found, I mean, just the, again, conjecture is so interesting in this trial because there's a lot of it. And we see it in a lot of trials, but I feel like there's been a lot of conjecture from witnesses just like speaking out of turn a bit that really are not in the favor of Karen Reed, where it has been, and I didn't have to do any math at all, and he did all the math for me. It's like, aren't you supposed to be doing that to, like, I don't know, just make sure like it's right if you're going to be testifying on it? If you found this error over here, but now you're saying you're just taking his math at will. So which pieces are you picking here and saying, I'm going to double check this, but not this over here? It seemed like a mess. I mean, I know he's an expert witness. I don't know what, you know, if it was just like, hey, you know, all we can afford is this. So what do I get for that amount of money? And this is what they got. I don't know, because I think he was not a cell phone expert either. He knew nothing about iPhones or anything in terms of pulling the data down. He knew about vehicles. So I thought that was also kind of a bizarre little crux. Like, why are you picking this guy who half of the point you're trying to make doesn't have any expertise in?
Tony, I am so glad you pointed that out, because that was the other glaring issue. I mean, he doesn't know anything about cell phone or cell phone times or how to coordinate. He's never, ever coordinated a text stream timing with an iPhone timing. And then he brought in Reed,
mm-hmm.
Reed's phone, which the whole idea was John O'Keefe. When did John O'Keefe's phone stop moving? You know, shut down compared to when the vehicle strike would have happened. The other point was that we all learned that text stream data does not denote a pedestrian mm-hmm. strike, yeah. only other collisions with vehicles. And I thought that was very important for all of us to understand. But of course, there was the deceleration, right?
Mm-hmm.
Which would line up with you've backed up at 75% throttle going almost 24 miles an hour, and now you're stopping, right? Decelerating mm-hmm. to move forward and leave.
Yeah.
So I think they still did a good job lining that up with, you know, when the collision would have taken place. And at the end of the day, that's what he said. He said John O'Keefe was hit, his elbow lined up with striking the taillight, and that those cuts were likely from that. So he spells it all out.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, and I thought Welcher did a very good job of spelling that out. And I felt it was a rather bizarre rebuttal with DeSorga. Keep wanting to say DiGiorno. I will be calling him DiGiorno for the rest of the trial if I have to reference. it was certainly very fascinating to watch all of that kind of play out. We also in the trial of Karen Reed here, as we're getting into this next week of testimony with the defense bringing their case in chief, we saw a friend of Proctor take the stand. The argument was made on Friday in voir dire that hey, maybe it should be Proctor that takes a stand if he's going to be bringing in this information to authenticate these texts. But judge did not agree with the prosecution on that. They agreed with the defense, and so they brought in at least one of the friends to try and authenticate these texts. And you know, those text messages were pretty damning in the first trial of Karen Reed. They really painted a horrible picture in terms of the image of Michael Proctor. Obviously, yes, there was an investigation done. They found that there was no other ill will things going on here other than it was kind of a sloppy investigation. And he said a bunch of horrible things, to which he was ending up being fired for. How do you think it landed this round, now that Karen's already... I mean, her image is not solid at this point, I think, with that jury. Very different than last time. Do you think we're going to see more about the text messages? Where do you think this all goes? And how do you think it landed with the initial introduction to the jury?
Well, two things, Tony. First of all, I wasn't surprised with Judge Cannone's ruling, because mm-hmm. she is always going to err on the side of the defense because she does not want this case overturned. Mm-hmm. And so she's going to give them, and has the whole trial given them, much leeway. Mm-hmm. Having said that, this was, I thought, such solid ground made by Brennan and the prosecution team that you cannot introduce these messages, because they are supposed to speak to the mindset of the person who produced them. And they put on there somebody else who not only didn't write any of them, mm-hmm. didn't even participate in that string, didn't even read these messages, mm-hmm. Because he was on a string that was 8 years long.
Yeah.
All these people had been, you know, texting and stuff. And sometimes you pay attention, sometimes you don't. You know how it is when mm-hmm. you're on these long strings with multiple friends. Mm-hmm. So he wasn't even really involved in it. I don't even know why they picked him. But I was really surprised at Judge Cannone's ruling that he could even introduce them. Then they pared them all down. And barely had any. I mm-hmm. mean, I think he read maybe a dozen, maybe, and they weren't even bad. There were a few that, again, were the I think three, you know, bad ones. But because last year they did it all together and they mm-hmm. put every one of it, just was so ugly. And Proctor reading them had a whole different way. In fact, this guy, I felt terrible for him when he said, "Judge, I don't feel comfortable reading these. I didn't read them at the time. I don't, you know, mm-hmm. please don't make me read them." Essentially, they had a sidebar and Brennan ended up reading them. And then he would just look and say, "Yes."
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I thought it was interesting hearing Brennan say those words. Although he didn't say them all verbatim. He's like, "And the C word." It's like, yep, that we know what the C word is. Yeah, it didn't have the quite the same, verbose feel to it that it did last time with Alan Jackson, you know, repeating them on the stand as Proctor was you know, having to repeat what he wrote.
Want more on this case and others? Then press subscribe now and don't miss a moment of true crime coverage from Tony Bruschi and the Hidden Killers podcast.